We begin the hour by getting on the telephone line and welcoming back to the program author of the Cooperstown Casebook, senior writer at Fangraphs, Jay Jaffe, with us. Hello, Jay.
Hey, Rich, how you doing?
Well, I'm doing well, but like you, I'm sure, and everybody following the baseball world, my head's still spinning from the news on what's happened with Major League Baseball and the Houston Astros and what may happen with the Red Sox and Alex Cora. What's your initial take on all of this?
I guess I'm impressed with the severity of the punishments. Both Luno and Hinch being suspended for a year and subsequently losing their jobs, obviously that's the big deal. The loss of the draft picks is actually probably the biggest financial impact. I'm going through that right now based on our methodology here at Fangraphs. For giving a present-day value of the picks. That's about $30 million worth of draft picks that they lost there, which dwarfs the $5 million fine that they're paying. A little surprised that Jim Crane himself escaped direct punishment, although losing that much money in terms of fines and other value is obviously a significant punishment unto itself. Not surprised that the players weren't disciplined. To do that, they would have had to involve the players' union, which would have been defending the players. All that stuff is subject to collective bargaining agreement and much more complicated. And what they were talking about was the failure of leadership of these teams to enforce these rules. And that's really where Rob Manfred drew his line in the sand. So I would expect Alex Cora is in big trouble. He's going to get at least a year suspension, and I would expect he's going to be out of a job too.
Yeah, I mean, right in the middle of what happened in Houston, apparently even acting after A.J. Hinch tried to destroy some of the technology they were using, and then that system worked so well, hey, let's bring it to Boston.
Well, they had a different system going in Boston that was not maybe not quite as egregious, but it happened after Manfred issued his warning in September 2017. So the Red Sox knew they were over the line. Cora is singled out within Manfred's report here. It doesn't mention very many names there besides Luno and Hinch, but Carlos Beltran gets one mention as one of, I think he's the only position player mentioned, the only hitter. And then Mike Fiers, obviously, for his role as the whistleblower to the Athletic reporters. And then it describes the system as being player-driven with the exception of bench coach Alex Cora. And obviously now there's an investigation into the Red Sox conduct. So I would imagine he could get, let's say, twice as long as Hinch in suspension, which obviously would probably also mandate his firing and who knows what else.
Wow. Well, ostensibly, we had you on today to talk about the Baseball Hall of Fame, but this story certainly took prominence this afternoon. But let's talk about the Hall. I've been loving the series of pieces you've been doing on Fangraphs about the one-and-dones. They were great.
Oh, thank you.
My favorite, I think, of all of them, well, a couple of them, and they were actually together. Carlos Pena, a guy I got to call some of his games when he was playing his college ball at Northeastern.
Oh, wow.
And he was one of those guys that didn't have the career that people projected for him, but an interesting story.
Yeah, definitely. And it took a very interesting path to the majors in that his parents, his family emigrated from the Dominican Republic and settled in Massachusetts. And he had two brothers that were also ballplayers, one of whom played professionally, and he went to Northeastern and studied engineering. Really interesting guy. I've actually done television with him before at MLB Network. Obviously very intelligent. What he knows goes well beyond the baseball field. And he had some big years there for the Rays. He was a transformative figure in their history. He joined them in 2007, had a big season after so many disappointments with the Tigers and the A's and the Rangers and being traded and bouncing around briefly to the Yankees and Red Sox as well, suddenly put it all together in Tampa Bay and was a huge figure for them, part of that 2008 pennant-winning team, and led the league in homers once, and just a very interesting career.
And another guy who had some moments and put up some overall good numbers, Alfonso Soriano, 412 career homers, nearly 300 stolen bases, a 28.2 WAR. What's keeping him out of the Hall and making him likely a one and done?
Well, he was, you know, he wasn't much of a defender either at second base or in left field. He had some big seasons in left field initially when he could still utilize his speed, but knee problems slowed him down. He was a hacker. I mean, he had years where he had his on-base percentages were around 300 or lower. I think it was his rookie year. It took him till like 25th game to draw his first walk. tremendous power, tremendous speed. 40-40 season. The last of the four 40-40 seasons in baseball history was done by him in 2006. Multiple 30-30 seasons. A lot of fun to watch, kind of an erratic ball player. In some senses.
We're talking with Jay Jaffe here on Downtown. So beyond the obvious, and I guess to me that would be Derek Jeter, out of this group that's on the ballot this year, and let's move the steroid guys to the side for a moment, who else should be?
Well, I'm a big proponent and have been for years of Larry Walker's case. It's going to be a nail biter as to whether he gets in this year, his 10th and final one on the writer's ballot. He's made a nearly unprecedented climb from the dregs. He was only getting about 10 to 11% a few years ago, but the work of the stat heads like myself has shined a light on his merits and really underscored the extent to which he was a true five-tool player, excelling on the bases and in the field as well as at the plate, and adjusting for his time at altitude with the Rockies when he put up some video game-like numbers. But I think it's going to be a nail-biter. I'm hopeful he gets in, but if not this way, then I think by the ERA committee down the road.
What about Scott Rowland?
Scott Rowland is making some big advances. He's a guy kind of that fits that mold where the analytics, I think, are really helping him. Right now, the early published votes, he's got over 50%. I think he's probably going to wind up closer to 40%, but that would be more than doubling what he got last year, which was about 17% in his second year on the ballot. Again, another guy whose case I'm a big proponent of. And happy to see it. Also seeing gains from guys like Todd Helton and Gary Sheffield, two guys who I'm behind, more so Helton in terms of my statistical system, the JAWS methodology, than Sheffield. But I have a very visceral appreciation for the latter, having watched him up close with the Yankees.
Any shot for Jeff Kent, or is that passed?
You know, I'm kind of surprised that Kent has lagged to the extent that he has. I always figured that having that home run record for second baseman and being a 100 RBI guy several times and having an MVP award on his mantle would make it pretty smooth sailing for him. But, you know, he was a prickly character. The advanced stats don't really favor him all that well. Kind of a middling on-base percentage for a big slugger and bad defensive metrics, and he's really lagged. He's been below 20% for several years, and right now, even with the additional ballot space for voters to play with, they've put some of the guys we just talked about ahead of him, and he's getting only about 28%. So I would say he's probably a guy who could do well in front of the ERA committee, not unlike Jack Morris a couple years ago, and Fred McGriff probably the next time around. I think Kent's the guy who, if he's going to get into the Hall, it's going to be through that route.
Bobby Abreu, to me, is an interesting case. Maybe it's because he was around a long time, and I forget how good he was, but then you look at the numbers.
He was so quietly excellent, just an on-base machine, good power, great speed. The big problem for him was that he escaped notice, particularly in those years in Philadelphia when he was at his best. Only made two All-Star teams, won one Gold Glove before his defense really deteriorated. He's struggling to get to maintain a share above 5%. I'm not terribly optimistic about that. You know, I think if he does, he'll survive for another year on the ballot, maybe even a couple. But I don't think it's. I don't think we're going to see a large scale movement of voters. I think we're seeing it's Gary Sheffield and Larry Walker among the right fielders that are getting the additional support here with this space, not Abreu. And it's kind of saddening, but I wish he'd done just a little more to make it more of a slam dunk case.
Did the Today's Game committee do it right? I was a little surprised. First of all, I was glad to see Dwight Evans finish third because I'm incredibly biased toward Dewey, but I loved him as a kid growing up. I was surprised that Dale Murphy didn't do that well.
Yeah, you know, there were so many. That was a packed ballot. You know, and the putting Lou Whitaker and Dwight Evans and Thurman Munson back into circulation in this format after so many years of being on the sidelines. Whitaker hadn't been on a ballot since 2001 when he went one and done with the Writers. Evans since 1999 when he was on his third time around with the Writers. Munson had only been on that expanded Veterans Committee ballot at the bottom there when in the early 2000s when they were letting the living Hall of Famers vote. There were just so many directions for voters to be pulled. Ultimately, what happened was that the two guys who had come one vote short in past elections, Ted Simmons and Marvin Miller, both of whom I've advocated for countless times, were the ones who'd got in. I thought Evans made a very solid showing his first time around. I would like to have seen Whitaker done a little bit better, but he got six votes in a very competitive field. Murphy, you know, he's not a guy who does particularly well by my system, but I said this in the wake of Harold Baines' election last year, that if there was anybody I could stomach being waved through despite my own analytical misgivings, if you will, it was Murphy. I mean, a two-time MVP, shortish career, but regarded widely as the best player in baseball for a period of time there. You know, I just think that the big thing for these guys when they vote is the counting stats. And if you're short of 400 home runs, as he is, even just short, and with that short career, you know, he's being penalized for the lack of longevity.
Well, unfortunately, the people who vote don't always look at your research, the Jaws numbers, and others who have put so much time into this. So who do you think will end up getting elected this year?
I think obviously Jeter. I think Curt Schilling is going to be short. I don't see him changing enough minds quickly enough to close the gap from the 63% he had last year.
I think so.
63%. I think he'll put himself in position to be elected next year, perhaps. Or eventually by the time his 10-year eligibility runs out. I think other than that, it's Walker or bust. You know, it could be a one-man class, it could be a two-man class. I don't think it's going to be a three-man class. You know, when you look to next year, there's no obvious first-time candidate hitting the ballot next year. So we could be in for some lean years here in the near future.
Well, we're looking forward to the announcement coming up next week. If you haven't done so already, get a copy of the Cooperstown Casebook and find out all you need to know about so many great baseball players through the years. And I'm told, Jay, I mean, I saw it on social media, so it must be true that if you place your beer next to the Cooperstown Casebook, it'll make whatever beer that is taste that much better.
Yes, that's true. A couple of my friends photographed the cover of my book next to their drinks recently, and I took that as quite the endorsement. So fun stuff.
Absolutely. Hey, Jay, we appreciate you making time for us. Thanks for stopping by this afternoon, and we'll catch up with you again down the road.
Okay, thanks so much.
That's Jay Jaffe, Fangraphs, and again, author of the Cooperstown Casebook, with us here on Downtown on a busy day in the sports news world, Major League Baseball, with those penalties and then firings coming down on the Houston Astros and a big question mark over the head of Alex Cora.